Hello, I'm Shifra. Lee Shifra.
And I'm Grant. Red Grant.
And I'm Lauren. Max Zorn.
So this must be Lethal Watching.
Living hell is another world.
Sorry.
Style of an audio play.
Sorry, folks. Hey!
Hello.
Lethal Watching!
Hello, Phil. Hello, Jared.
Hello, Martin. Howdy. Episode 39.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no.
Why is 39 a bad number for you?
No, it just means we've done 39.
39, yeah. 39.
The next one's actually going to have to be a reasonably big one, then.
Why is that? It's 40.
This is 40.
That's not a big number.
It ends in an O.
Does that mean technically our podcast is then like in the 40s, is like over the hill?
Pretty much. Although 30 would have been probably middle-aged.
Yeah.
However, really, 40 is the new 30.
Yeah. Oh, good call, Martin.
To try and tie it into 40 somehow, what we're going to do. But let's save that for the end.
Well, I came up with an idea there in my head straight away.
Excellent.
Because when you're 40, you know, you try to recapture, you know, youth and stuff. So what do? You grow a mustache.
Mm. Oh, I've done it. Now
mustache special. There you go.
Mustache special. So are we just going to spend an entire episode talking about Tom Selleck?
Yeah. Tom Selleck special. Yay! Right, we will go to the show for next week. Bye.
Bye.
Oh no! Wait! We haven't talked about this show yet, have we? Shit.
No. Oh, balls. What are we doing?
Well, Martin, it's your idea, so you tell us.
What are we doing?
Okay, we are doing some bondage.
Hey!
Yeah, we're going to talk about James Bond for an hour and 45 minutes.
So, are we really, seriously, suggesting we're going to do all of Bond in an hour?
No, we're going to pick one of our favourites, and then maybe just touch on some of the others as well and talk about some of the actors who's done them, I reckon.
The if we get to
some of the actors.
Yes.
So, okay, yes. Then. So, I've chosen for my Bond film Casino Royale.
A brave pick. I mean, you're going to defend the Woody Allen film. I think that's quite brave.
Yes. I also said last time on Lethal Watching, we're sticking to MGM ones, which means that the old Casino Royale, which was shit, and the fucking Never Say Never Again. I wish it never fucking existed.
I think you'll find I cut that out of the podcast last week, Martin. You never actually said those words. And we have no proof that you said it, so.
I know that. I was just testing you as well.
Of course you do.
Of course.
But I've gone for a true classic, which is From Russia With Love.
And I've gone for what some might consider James Bond the difficult years.
Yes.
A View to a Kill.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant. But who's going first?
Martin!
Ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba, ba-da-ba-da. We'll be right back.
Casino Royale. Obviously, more known because it's the first run on Daniel Craig's Bond films, came into the series. It was the reboot of the series, really, because this was the very first adventure seeing 007 just becoming a double agent. And the way that they set it out in the beginning sequence was a brilliant take on the whole gun barrel sequence, because they didn't have Bourne. The gun barrel. Sorry?
Jason Bourne.
Oh, come on.
Little frog in my throat there.
No
sorry.
Way.
Little frog in my throat. Sorry. I had a cough, Martin. Sorry, can't carry on.
But no, it's a good take on it. It's all black and white, and then it all goes to colour when he makes the second kill to make him a double agent. The gun barrel comes in, and it works perfectly. It's seamlessly done. It's a really, really clever little take. But I can see where you're coming from. A lot of people do criticise the film for being a little too Jason Bourne-y. But I disagree. I think it was going in that direction anyway, especially if you look at Die Another Day, which was quite dark, and also the action-packed. I think it was certainly...
Yeah, but that had like an invisible car in it, didn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it did. But
Jason Bourne didn't have an invisible car. He had a magazine and he'd kill people with it. You know what I'm saying?
As far as I'm concerned, a lot of stuff could do with being a bit more Jason Bourne-y, so I don't mind.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't say it's a bad thing. Just saying it was... You could class it as being quite a cynical move on the part. It was like, that was what was being successful, so therefore let's get Bond that way. Well, but it works for the character. It works for the character. So it was a good idea. In the end, it was a good idea.
It makes me think of, just all this talking about it, makes me think of, you know, the film Triple X, which was kind of supposed to be the, this is not James Bond, because at the start they have the guy who's very much a James Bond kind of guy. It's a guy in a tux.
Oh, he gets killed by it, doesn't
he? He gets killed when he goes into, like, head up, sort of hole. Thing. And they're kind of saying, you know, this is not your typical spy sort of stuff. But Casino Royale does it, but still puts him in a tux, so it's fine. Because, you know, he needs to wear a tux at least once.
True.
He does. And the thing is, as well, don't forget that this is actually based on the original book from way, way back. It's certainly been changed here and there, because obviously it needs to be updated and everything. But it does it really well. The whole plot of this film is Bond's after a bomb maker in Africa. There's a really cool free-running sequence for that right at the beginning of the film where he tries to hunt him down. Unfortunately, the bomb maker actually dies, but he managed to get his phone, and he gets to find out the next link up who hired him as a bomb maker and all that. And it all winds up to a fellow named Le Chiffre, who organises terrorist attacks to try and bring down stock prices in world-class companies and leading companies, and is very much an accountant for all criminal underworld architectures. And basically...
He's an insider trader.
He is an insider
Those
trader.
Goddamn bankers.
Bankers. But yeah... So anyway, Bond basically stops one of his terrorist attacks on a brand new airplane, a shuttle, and because he stops that, the chief needs to make back the money urgently. So he organises a high-stakes Texas Hold'em poker session over in France, isn't it? And he goes over and...
It's in Monte Carlo, isn't it?
Yes. So MI6 decide that they want Le Chiffre on their side as an insider, and the only way that they can do that is by getting an agent into the game to win the game, so that he'll be asking MI6 for protection from all the people who are owed money.
From the game.
From the game, and also from the losses from Bond stopping the bomb on the airplane. Because obviously he made some dodgy deals for people to get stocks in the airplane when the bomb blew up the plane.
Yeah, because he's like investing other bad people's money.
Yes, yes.
In like that, this deal was going to go through and it fails. So like everyone's like, "I want my money.
Where's my money?
Where's my money?"
Indeed. So Bond's apparently the best player in the service. So they
in the world, him. I believe. I think you'll find.
Well, yeah, but that's not mentioned in the film.
It's just it's implied, surely.
It's implied, but
yeah.
To be honest, they're our best poker players around.
Better than Bond?
Yes, because he loses first off.
Yeah, he's but, you know, if he loses again, he'll just shoot them in the face.
That's true. He's done that before.
Yeah, exactly.
For those listeners of my podcast.
There we no go. Cross-selling, Martin, okay?
Sorry.
Put that in the bud right now. No more Indeed. Cross-selling.
No more plugging. So, yeah, so basically the film then goes off to him in the game. Are we doing spoilers?
Yeah, it's Bond. Jesus, everyone's seen him.
Okay, fair enough. So, as we just mentioned, actually, Bond loses his money first off because he believes he's found a tell in the chiffre. But that turns out to be a lie. He loses his money and wants to buy back in. Bond's counterpart, who has all the money, is known as Vesper Lynd, a rather delectable
steady
Eva Green. She's rather nice.
Toppy.
You know what, though? And I was thinking this the other day because I was watching that film Franklin, which Eva Green is in. Eva Green's voice, I find it very irritating.
Is that because it's French? You're racist.
It's because it's just
God
the way
typical
she speaks.
Irish racism.
It winds me up.
Xenophobia. That's all it is. Disgusting.
No, it's just it's the fact that she's whenever generally she's speaking, it's not to me. It doesn't sound French. It's like she's putting on some sort of silly accent with it, and it's just like it just. I don't know. I just don't like it. She's very pretty, but I don't like her voice.
I just don't like it.
You just don't like
it. We just have to shut the hell up.
Well, she's still very pretty, even if she's silent.
Stand there.
You just stand there looking at her.
Every so often.
But anyway, Eva Green is Vesper, who holds the money. And when Bond says, right, he wants to buy back in, she goes, no, because you can't do this. You're crap.
No.
No. So instead...
Get money. You can't have any more.
Exactly. Just like his mother. So instead... Bond bumps into an unknown friend at that time by the name of Felix Leiter,
Good
who
beard.
Decides to give him his share of the money instead because he sucks at poker. And he then goes in with Felix's money and goes on to win the game and pretty much fucks up Le Chiffre. So he goes out, kidnaps Bond and Vesper and tortures them.
Ooh, that's a scene there, isn't it? That's a scene.
Yeah. Oh, yes, with the old whipping of the bollocks.
Yes.
You do bollocks.
Spinny rope. But I love that, because like, it was Daniel Craig's like, to the left,
yes.
I've got an itch.
The password, please. I've got a little itch.
You are a funny man, Mr. Bond. Ah! Yeah! Ah! Ah! Mm! Yes! 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 Now the whole world's gonna know that you don't scratch my balls.
So yeah, so they're basically tortured until Vesper makes a deal. They manage to escape. Le Chiffre gets killed by some double-crossing people. I think the people who he lent the money to from the organisation who he obviously lost the money to came back for Le Chiffre, end up killing him. And
Spectre.
Then further down, well, it was Spectre, then it turned into Quantum.
Quantum.
Yeah, updating. But yes, and... they're all happy as can be when it turns out that...
They're actually really happy, aren't they? Because Bond's
they
like,
really
he's all on a boat, he's wearing like a relaxed summer jumper, he's happy.
He's on the verge of quitting the service and everything when all of a sudden Vesper decides to leave one day and she decides to take all of the money out of her account, out of which Bond thinks, no, she couldn't have done it. So he goes to follow her and meets up with a man, a strange man, and she sees him give the money to him, and then he works it all out that she was the person who actually betrayed him. She was the person who actually told Le Chiffre about the misleading tick, which led to him losing poker first off. And unfortunately, Vesper's then tragically killed in a rather touching scene, actually.
Yeah, drowning is always quite touching.
Yes, it is. Well, no, but the whole afterwards, because Bond goes into rescue her and then tries to revive her.
Yeah, and then goes and punches some men in the face.
Yes, he does, because he wants to get the money back. So he goes on to get the money back.
That's my money, bitches.
The person, yes.
That's exactly what he says in that exact voice as well.
And indeed.
It's my money, bitches. I'm coming for it.
And that's basically Casino Royale, even if it's a bit long and drawn out. The film is far much better than my summation.
It is a good Bond film. It is a really good film.
Really good.
Because the previous Bond film was Dying of the Day, and
yes.
Regardless of that film having one of the top five Bond themes, it wasn't a great film.
Really?
What? One of the top five?
Yeah, yeah, bitches, you heard me say it.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god.
Oh no, no, here it comes. No. Here comes the song. Wait, gonna play it right now. Woo!
Casino Royale had one of the best Bond films. Bond themes.
Well. I have a real issue with... Okay, let's first of all, let's talk about... We're not supposed to be talking about Dying Another Day. But that bleepity, bloppity, bloopity nonsense from Madonna.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Madonna.
Yeah, bleepity, bloopity, bloopity, bloppity, bloopity. Have you actually listened to it, Jared? Have you sat down and listened to it with your ears as a song? Have you, Jared? Have you listened to it? Have you?
I do. And I go like this. Oh, shit, it's Madonna.
But it's awesome! Come on!
Right, well, let's move on. Anyway, I have a real issue with Casino Royale. I like the song. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like the Quantum of Solace song too much, but I have a real issue with their new approach to, basically, James Bond songs, in that they're kind of like, let's get someone who's a little bit rocky and do, like, a rocky song, but with a bit of, an orchestra sort of mixed in with it, because to me they're not really, I think, although I know they're trying to differentiate the new films from the old, that, you know, you still gotta have the theme tune, and I think they could do so much better.
I really hate
that Quantum of Solace song. Oh,
the funny thing is that you're saying that you don't know why they're so rocky, and yet you've just chosen the film A View to a Kill, which is done by Duran Duran.
Classic.
Which is a classic theme, but it's far from, like, it's very much a pop, very much a rocky at the time kind of sound.
It's completely different to
the classic tunes of, say, Goldfinger or whatever.
Well, I guarantee you, though, that A View to a Kill will be far better remembered than that Chris Cornell song. Arm yourself, because no one else here will save you. The arms will betray you.
It'll be well remembered as Dying of the Day.
That's probably true, actually.
I find Chris Cornell, I think it's a decent song, but I think it's disposable. It's gone. It's done. It's not something I would want to listen to very much. Whereas A View to Kill, you always got to go.
Dance into the fire, fading kiss. Sorry. Later. Get to it later. Sorry. Move on. Yeah. Casino Royale, great, yeah, good.
Yes, everyone big thumbs up for Casino Royale.
Good car crash as well. Good car crash.
That's true.
A little bit heavy on the Sony stuff. We'll have to mention that.
Yes.
I'm very excited. We may as well talk about it now because we're talking about the new Bond. I am quite excited about Skyfall because I think Sam Mendes will hopefully do something very
very good. I didn't so much like Quantum of Solace as much as Casino Royale, because for me, Quantum of Solace, there isn't really much there other than sort of set piece to set piece to set piece. And you could probably argue that a lot of James Bond films, that the whole point, the plot is, you know, inconsequential when you're trying to just basically.
And it didn't have a good villain in Quantum of Solace. It wasn't like the villain was kind of vague and not well defined.
It was just like a little dude. It's like, well, who are you, you little dude?
Little Frenchy dude. What's going on?
You know, yeah. I think if you know they're trying to make these new films different, well, yeah, but it just didn't. Quantum of Solace. I didn't really like it too much.
What are your thoughts then of Casino Royale? I mean, you did.
I like Casino Royale. I think it could have been a bit shorter. Maybe I think it was a bit longer than it kind of maybe needed to be. And I don't need 3 or 4 different sort of endings. But it's
no, good. The ending of that film is really good.
Yeah, I like the actual ending, but there is about 2 or 3 before that.
Yeah. I also think, separate from the actual Bond theme, quote unquote, the actual score by David Arnold is really good. Cause the way they kind of layer in the Bond theme. Yeah. You don't actually hear it until his big moment at the end, and you get the full on proper Bond theme. And the way they kind of. I think I remember at the time you were saying, like, whenever he does something Bondish, he gets like a bit of the Bond theme as like a reward.
Mm.
And it kind of layers up through the whole film until by the end you've got like the full on down, 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 like that at the end. So the end was cool.
David Arnold actually released a album. I keep on saying film when I mean songs. David Arnold released an album, all Bond songs, way before he actually did any of Bond films. And they were
that's after GoldenEye, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
The best one's the On Her Majesty's Secret Service with the propeller heads.
Yes.
That's an awesome song.
I think we'll listen to it right now. Yes, Joe, that was awesome. Yes, I thoroughly agree.
But I love the cover of Live and Let Die as well, which is done by Chrissie Hynde. Really good take on it. But yeah,
right now?
My point is that he did that album way first, and then the Bond producer decided to rope him in as John Barry's replacement.
Yeah, because did he score, was it After Tomorrow Never Dies?
I think so.
That was 97. I think it was after that the album came out, so I think it was... Time. Into there.
Just checking now.
They were all good. Because, you know, John Barry did a lot of good for Bond film. We did one very bad thing that we'll discuss later.
Yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies was his first.
Good me, though, shit.
And he also did Independence Day, which I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, and Stargate, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Two classics of the genre. Well, we'll pencil in a Dave Arnold special, then.
Yes, he's done a lot of good stuff, yes. So, yes, so I think that's...
Casino Royale. And I think also what Casino Royale does well, it kind of gets back to the heart of Bond. The kind of real, the brutal kind of side of that. That's there in the books and in like the first few Connery films, but then kind of goes away for a bit. Comes back a little bit with Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, like I'd a say little bit. There's a lot of flashes. It's very comparable to Daniel Craig's Bonds. It's very dark and very
bloody. Yeah. And Brosnan's more like a kind of slightly harder Roger Moore.
Yes,
definitely. He's I think it's George Lazenby was the first attempt
at the dark stuff.
At the dark stuff.
Yeah.
At the different Bond, the different type of Bond.
Yeah.
Who of course then only lasted one film, and then they moved on to
Sean Connery.
Connery.
Yeah. Alright, as we're here, we mentioned different Bonds. Okay, I'm going to ask a question of you two guys now, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where do you stand on Bond being a code name?
I'm against it. And I'll tell you why in a second, but go ahead, Jared.
I couldn't give a flying fuck.
Okay, that's one against.
Because to me, it wouldn't make any difference to the explosions and the fights and the shooting and the gadgets and the whatnots and everything else.
Okay. Well, I'm a firm believer in the Bond as a code name.
I think they definitely, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, that is essentially what they're saying.
Yeah, I know it's never been confirmed. It's never been confirmed, has
no,
it?
No, but the thing
it's,
is that...
I think they are. I think it's a... Well, no, I can see the argument for it. It's just a cheeky wink to say... You know, yes, I'm not Sean Connery.
Yes.
But
that was just a cheeky joke to the camera, but they are entirely the same manner. Now, I'll tell you why. Because in that film, when he's close to quitting quite early on in the film, he goes into his drawer and he actually pulls out some gadgets from Bond's earlier quests, which includes the old watch from Wish With Love, which we'll talk about later.
It was old Bond stuff that he'd inherited from the old Bond. Maybe, huh?
Okay,
maybe.
Fair enough. If you think that, what about the end of the film? He marries Tracy Bond, who dies.
Yeah.
Roger Moore is then seen in For Your Eyes Only visiting the grave at the start of Tracy Bond.
Because it was his sister.
It says devoted wife on it.
Yeah, it was Roger Moore's sister before he became Bond. So in a way, he was married to his own sister?
No.
Yeah. Feasible.
And also, there's another little gadget quotation part with... Quotation mark? What am I saying? Edit that. There's also another little...
No, frankly, I refuse.
There's also another
you don't believe in my theory, so no, you're not getting any editing in this.
There's also another little gadget reference part of the film in Die Another Day, because it's obviously... it was the 20th Bond film to be produced, so they did a little anniversary special where they got some of the old gadgets together in the old...
Yeah, that's right. In the
hangout base, which had the
It could be, it couldn't be. As I say, to me, it.
No, you gotta take a stance, Jared, because Martin's for. I'm for. Martin's against.
Well then, what are they saying about you? You've got to take a stance.
Why can't you accept that they're all the same character, but just look
because
different?
I think it being a code name makes it better.
How?
Because I just think it does.
I just think it overcomplicates things.
I think if they were all reasonably similar, then you could go, well, they're obviously all the same person, but because Roger Moore stands out like a sore thumb, in between everyone else who's played them, it's just kind of like, oh, really? Is he really the same guy as Daniel Craig or Sean Connery? Oh, do you think that Daniel Craig is the same Bond as the rest of them? Or do you think it's like alternate universe Bond?
Yeah,
I think it's the same, because I think it's all about age, and I like to think that Roger Moore's Bond is when he is older, so his character would have changed.
And then Roger Moore's Bond is when he's ready for his pension.
Yeah, pretty much. And he's still getting chicks. So
still getting chicks. No, I'm a firm believer in the different dude code name. And down throughout history. I like it.
Because there are people who say that about the Doctor as well. And is the Doctor a code name, and how there's many different types of Doctors.
Or is the Doctor James Bond? No.
You know, it's funny you say that, because
you never see him regenerate. You never see him regenerate.
You do.
You do on my show, The Martin Kilbain Show. Sorry.
True facts. More cross-selling.
So what do you mean you don't see him regenerate?
You don't see James Bond regenerate between Bonds.
Oh, James Bond. I thought that was Doctor.
Rebonderate.
Rebonderate.
Yeah. So I think we'll go in reverse chronological order.
I'll go next.
Into take us on a journey, Jared, back to the 80s.
Let me take you back to
Best year for film ever.
Second best year for film ever. Okay. back
to... It was your year, Jared. Don't dismiss it.
I know. Back to the middle of a strange decade.
The greatest decade?
An odd day. I think the greatest decade ever.
Clearly.
The 1980s. 1985, to be exact. We're smack bang in, you know, new romanticism and everything else that came with it. High street bankers, money making, you know, Ferraris, flash cars. Basically, you know, the 80s were all about the money. Everybody gets to get paid. Everybody wants to get paid, and they will do it in any way possible. And James Bond comes up against someone who just basically wants to make a lot of money, which is Mr. Max Zorin, played by, I can't really do Christopher Walken impression, I was trying to, the Christopher Walken. I can't really do it.
It's not bad, though.
The Christopher Walken.
And you, good stuff.
Anyway, I'll work on it.
Come back in a few years, we'll do the podcast again, yeah?
Yes. And this was Roger Moore's last appearance as James Bond. And boy, does it show. Ooh, he is old.
He is girdled up in this film, isn't he?
He is craggy-faced. He is walking with, like, hunched over. He's got a bad back. He's got a fake hip. He's, this is Roger Moore.
One
this
eye.
You know, he's literally ready to. He literally is gets his free bus pass.
Do you know how old he was?
How old was he?
58.
Oh, he's heading. He's just
yet he still beds Mayday.
Well, this is it. He still gets Grace Jones, the ladies.
he bites him as well. I forgot about that.
A View to a Kill, I think, now there's quite a lot of different movie posters, but I think A View to a Kill has the most awesome poster of all the James Bonds.
No, I was going to mention that, because I just looked
on it. Picture this, we have James Bond standing on one of the big cables of the Golden Gate Bridge in a tux, shooting a gun at, I don't know what he's shooting a gun at, because Christopher Walken's behind him in a blimp.
Yeah, it's just like his head poked out with a blimp, like, hello! I'm in a blimp! Look at my blimp! Woo! Blimp! Woo!
I'm in a blimp!
To be fair, it's bonkers,
and it's all fisheye lensed, and it's crazy. And it's amazing. It's just everything that you would think about James Bond in the Roger Moore era. Completely ludicrous, completely insane, just daft. Absolutely, I don't know. You know, I am strongly convinced that by the time after the first couple of Roger Moore films, they just thought, you know what?
What's the point?
Just fuck it. Let's just go all out here. And they essentially turned, I think now, a lot of them into real just parody type films. They really just thought every film was the next film in the Roger. Every film in Roger Moore, I think the next one was always about just completely topping the bonkersness that they'd just done. And it all came, I think, to a head in A View to a Kill.
Octopussy is a more of a low point of the genre because that's the clown one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a terrible one. However, an unknown one is actually For Your Eyes Only, and that's actually quite a dark one as well.
Actually, I might be wrong because I think Moonraker might actually be the most bonkers of all the Roger Moore films.
Clearly.
Moonraker is clearly the nuttiest of all the James Bond films. Yeah. It also has an amazing poster. I don't know what's going on in the poster for Moonraker. It's just, it looks like Jaws is like coming, I don't know. I'm assuming he's supposed to be in negative gravity. Yet James Bond somehow is standing. He's got some
magnet
sort of
boots. Magnet boots.
There's just women everywhere. It's nowhere near, I don't think, as good as the image of James Bond in a tux on top of the Golden Gate Bridge with Dr. Elsa Schneider. Isn't that Elsa Schneider? I think it is.
Isn't Dr. Holly Goodhead?
Is it Alison Doody?
I don't know. It's Dr. Holly Goodhead.
No, she's
a woman.
Good afternoon.
Can I help you?
Yes, my name is Bond. James Bond. I'm looking for Dr. Goodhead.
You just found her.
A woman.
Who's Jenny Flex? Duty?
No, that's Stacey.
That's Stacey Sutton standing with him? All right, sorry. I just wanted to drop in Alison Duty's name because it's a great name.
No, it's Lois Charles in the poster.
Who's it?
It's Holly Goodhead. No. Moonraker poster.
View to Kill.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You stupid fool.
You stupid fool.
But anyway, A View to Kill. Brilliant music.
Should we listen to it for a little while?
Yeah.
Someone gets killed with a fishing rod.
Does that make it? Is that like the seal of quality? Fishing rod death.
Boom. Fishing in the neck. Wacko. In the soup.
We should actually say that there's no editing there. He did actually just say that following on from that song.
That's it. But straight back in. Boom.
Christopher Walken hams it up as this crazy white haired. The whole plot is.
His character is brilliant, though. Mac Zorin is fantastic.
They're going to destroy Silicon Valley because that is literally the only place in the world they make anything electronic.
Exactly. This was the 80s. That's how it works.
In the name, Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And if you can't make anything else except in Silicon Valley, so he's going to destroy it and he will be king of electronics and microchips.
Yeah.
Because in the 80s, everyone was fucking obsessed with microchips.
They were.
Everyone wanted microchips. Everyone loved microchips. Microchips in this and microchips in that. It was the future.
And don't forget as well, like he was created by a Nazi as well.
he is literally Nazi an Aryan.
Trained by the KGB. He's like, wow, brilliant. And he's got a blimp.
He has a blimp and he kills people by making their chairs fall.
He's like, hey, just go into the other room. We'll discuss this in the other room. Just go into that corridor. Walk down this corridor into the other room. Like, okay, Max.
Just
okay.
Go down. Just back a bit.
Boom, floor back gone.
Back a bit. Yeah, just hold it. There we go.
Ciao.
And of course, well, Grace Jones as Mayday. Grace Jones, what a nutter of a woman.
She's crazy.
You know, she's in this and she's bonkers and she's Zorin's lover. And she's like some sort of
crazy lady
type character.
Well, she makes Zool from Ghostbusters look normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's crazy. You know, I don't know.
But she has she gets into bed with Roger Moore.
Well, because Roger Moore is clearly.
I mean, like he's kissing her and he rolls his eyes like, oh, here we go again. Jesus.
Here we go again.
God damn it.
It's nuts. You know, it's all the gadgets, it's all the bonkers plot, that's the crazy stupid
I get the feeling there's some nostalgia working here, because like me, would this be your first Bond?
I think that I could probably say yes, because I don't know why, it's the one I always remember.
Yeah.
Probably I think I remember the ITV or UTV over here at one stage just doing a complete Bond thing where they went from start to finish. And I think that's probably where I saw most of the Bonds at that stage. But I don't think I saw this in the cinema.
The TV premieres of the MOOC was like the number one film ever seen on the British television, Live and Let Die.
Is it really?
Yeah, 23.5 million viewers in 1980.
Wow.
Second is Jaws, and The Spy Who Loved Me is third with 22.9, and Diamonds Are Forever at number four. But obviously, that was in the early 80s, back when, you know, films did take, what, 3-4 years to come back?
There was only a few channels as well, so.
Yeah. So, like a Bond film at Christmas.
I mean,
like
this film, I don't know, I haven't gone through every single Bond film, but this film made a colossal amount of money for the budget. Like 30 million budget and a box office of 152, so like five times what they put into it, they got out. And
I think on the overall scale, it comes out pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's probably looked back on as I said, it's the difficult year. It was very much the difficult years.
Yeah, it's tied with the 80s camp brush, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's very, it's highly, highly camp. It's highly, highly, it's silly. But that's, to me, that's the whole point of it. Now, there's different things. Before Christopher Walken took this, they apparently wanted David Bowie to play Zorin. Then they also offered it to Sting. And then to Christopher Walken. And, Dolph Lundgren is actually in it as well as a very, very short cameo. I can't even think of where he is, but apparently he's in it somewhere.
Apparently it's at the racetrack, according to Wikipedia.
Is it? Okay.
Where the KGB meet up with Mac Zorin.
It's very much 80s chic. I don't know how else you would describe A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
It's just, it's nuts. What was the one before it?
Octopussy.
That's the crappy. That's probably the crappy one.
I mean, the whole Roger Moore era is a bit weird.
I will say, yeah, although they definitely went out with a bang. I think from Octopussy to this, they clearly went,
But I mean, you can sum up the whole Roger Moore era really with one sequence in, I think it's The Man with the Golden Gun, where you've got
the end.
You've got like one of the most awesome car stunts you've ever seen on film. You've got the car flip where they calculated the weight of the car and then go rotation. Exactly. They've used a supercomputer to figure out this jump to flip a car from two parts of the bridge to the other. It's a fantastically amazing stunt. And they put a sweaty whistle over it.
You're not thinking
that. I sure am, boy.
Ever heard of Evel Knievel?
I've never done that before.
Neither have I, actually.
Yeah.
And that's the best, for me, sums up the whole Roger Moore era. You've got like this amazingly kind of fantastic technical stunt, and then someone goes, it's like, no, Rog, no. Poor Roger Moore.
I think he's generally seen as a bit of a joke.
I don't
know if anyone honestly, seriously, honestly would ever say that Roger Moore was the favourite James Bond.
I think people do.
People would say it for the crack, but I don't know if they say it and mean it.
Well, I think, to be fair to Roger Moore, I don't think this is all his fault, really. Because when you look right back at the start, right back at Dr. No, apparently, what's his name? Ian Fleming wanted Roger Moore to play Bond.
Wow.
I think it's more the writers deciding.
Yeah, the tone of the script.
I think at the time his films were just a product of the time. Really, it was just he came into it a very difficult the early 70s to the mid 80s. You know, like that's hard.
Yeah,
for films,
like,
I think
like the early 70s in cinema, you've got the studio systems essentially collapsed, and you've got like all the new Hollywood films, the big blockbusters, like
apparently
Godfather and French Connection. And Bond is anachronistic in that time. It's like, I think people were starting to get tired of Bond.
Yeah. Apparently Moore was voted best Bond in an Academy Awards poll with 62% of the vote.
They didn't ask the right people then, did they?
I hate the Academy Awards thing anyway. I hate the Oscars and all that shite anyway, so I wouldn't trust that.
But if he grew up on that era with that Bond, because he was a Bond for a long time, so, you know, he's like, what was it,
70s to 80s, yeah.
He's like 12 good, okay. Years. I'm probably being a bit harsh on him. He's good. He makes it more fun, probably, than Sean Connery did. And he made it definitely more cartoonish.
Oh, yeah.
His films are by far the most cartoonish.
And you don't
of
get
all
those kind of films. The closest film to that kind of tone is G.I. Joe.
Die Another Day.
G.I. Joe!
Which is pish.
To be fair, A View to a Kill is actually really good. The only thing that I dislike about this film is Stacey. She is the worst Bond girl ever.
She's so wet.
She just screams at everything.
And she goes,
absolutely
James!
James!
That's what she does. She goes, James!
James!
James! That's what she says. James!
I mean, the guy who directed A View to a Kill directed 5 James Bond films.
John Glenn.
Yeah, For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy, View to a Kill, and then into the Living Daylights and License to
Kill. Daylights. Oh, that's the wrong kind of song, isn't it?
Wow, that is all in order then. Yeah, he did.
He did the 5 in a row, yeah.
So what else did he do? Did he just do the Bonds?
That's bound to be the most that anyone's done as a director. He also worked as a second unit director on Her Majesty's Secret Service, Spy Who Loved Me, and Moonraker.
Worked on Superman as well.
And another,
You know, it's like he's bound to have done the most.
And he directed the TV series Space Precinct.
Oh,
wow.
I remember that.
Wow.
Space Precinct?
I remember that, the Gerry Anderson show.
The Gerry Anderson thing.
Yeah, terrible.
Shut your face, Kilbane. Shut your pie hole.
I just remember being on. It came out just at the time we got Sky.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this is the kind of shit you never get on ITV, man.
To be fair, Crime Traveller was better, but Space Precinct was awesome.
Yeah.
There was no bugs. Neither of them was a bugs, but it was still good.
Anyway, well, that's a view to a kill.
Yeah.
That's a view to a kill.
Yeah, well, now we've finished talking about your non-bonds, yeah? Your four non-bonds. We're going to get some proper bondage now.
Yes.
Proper man punching, martini drinking, suit wearing, spy killing Bond. He's from Russia and he loves you, so it's From Russia with Love.
Only the second James Bond thriller could be more exciting than the first.
Krylenko. So he's back. Another Bulgarian they use as a killer. Take a look. You should remember him. This man kills for pleasure.
James Bond, the notorious, amazing Dr. No secret agent, is back, and half the world is out to chill him as he fits his murderous talents against the Iron Curtain and its velvet women.
Well, I'll tell you something, Coltoni. You're one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen.
I think my mouth is too big.
No, it's the right size. For me, that is.
From Russia with Love comes Tatiana, bait for the trap. From the four corners of the world come the men and women who play a deadly, dangerous game of espionage.
Do not be alarmed, my friend. We will make you as comfortable as possible.
Ali Kerim Bey, head of Station T, Turkey. Krasnogramsky, codename Grant, chief executioner of Spectre.
My orders are to kill you and deliver the lector. Oh, I do. It's my business.
M of British Secret Service. The woman called Rosa Klebb, playing a double cross.
Romano. The door. Romano!
Speaking of posters, meet James Bond. His new incredible women, his new incredible enemies, his new incredible adventures from Russia with Love. Good poster, that.
It's a bit of a tame poster, actually, on Bond standards. There must be a more exciting one.
No. From Russia with Love. From Russia with Love. That's you did it twice. Shit. This is probably my favourite Bond film. Because I think this has, like, probably the purest Bond spy plot.
Yeah. Joe, I was just before you go on, I was talking about how much money, View to a Kill made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that for a friggin' for $2 million, box office return of 78.9.
Boom. There's some money for you.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
This is in 1963.
Yeah, shit, bro. Yeah, what's the adjusted box office? $500 million. In adjusted box office. Oh, bruv. View to a Kill adjusted is $316 million. So this film is £200 million better.
£200 million better.
Yeah, and it is. Bond, For Russia with Love, has got Bond basically going out to steal some kind of cryptographic device from the Soviets. Bring it back. Well, Smirsch is going after him because he killed Dr. No in the first film. Smirsch. And all the time, he's being followed by one of the best Bond villains ever in Robert Shaw, who is amazing in this film. Properly amazing.
You see the headlines? British agent murders beautiful Russian spy, then commits suicide.
Tell me, which lunatic asylum did they get you out of?
Come at me, bruv. You can't, can you? Because he's amazing.
He is. Thank the you. First sequence is brilliant.
Oh, he's just fantastic.
Yeah,
You've got the sequence Martin, I believe, is referring to is James Bond being stalked around some hedges. And then he gets strangled, and then he turns out it's like training for Robert Shaw's character to go out and assassinate Bond. So out he goes, and then Bond's off in Turkey doing his adventure. He's watching some gypsy women fight each other, having a drink. He's shooting some people with his crazy sniper rifle. He gets into a bag, and then he sneaks into the KGB place using some other people to help him. I forget who it was. They get the lecture out, and then boom, they're on a train. They go on a train trying to get out of back into, you know, somewhere safe where they can give the lecture back to people who can use it to spy on the spies. And he gets into a sniper battle with a helicopter. He wears a hat and a boat. He blows shit up. Oh, it's brilliant.
This film's it's quite interesting because this, like, a lot of people talk about Casino Royale and Quantum Solace and the way they follow on from each other, but this is essentially a direct sequel.
Yeah.
From Dr. No, you know, like...
kind of thing, Spectre.
Yeah, it follows on exactly from Dr. No. Not the same way that Quantum of Solace actually starts with the end of Casino Royale, but it is its direct timeline, whereas that's quite unusual still for James Bond films.
Yeah, because normally it's like Final Fantasy
There is no time really in them, is there? They're not... No.
Well, I'd say certainly the Sean Connery ones are all connected because they're all members of Spectre that he goes after.
Shmush.
Right up to the end of... Right up to... what's the other one? You Only Live Twice.
Yeah.
Because that's when he finally meets Blofeld.
Yeah, and then the new guy takes over and they get someone else. Nah, see different people. Mm-hmm. Nah. But I think what makes this film so good is Robert Shaw. He's just brilliant. His kind of blonde hair, English accent, crazy psychopath. Top notch.
Yeah.
This film hasn't got in kind of deference to the rest of the Bond films, it's kind of probably one of the least Bondy films in that there hasn't got the kind of big crazy villain lair, hasn't got the big crazy gadgets.
It's more of a spy film.
Yeah, it's more like a stripped back kind of spy film. He's got like stuff in like his attaché case that detonates and stuff, but it all seems it's kind of bedded in some kind of reality. Like, you know, when you get up to you know, like the invisible car in Die Another Day. Fantastic Bond song notwithstanding, you know, you're just getting daft. But with this film succeeded, it is still like a really kind of good, honest, you know, spy film plot. You know, you've got double crosses and double agents and all sorts.
Yeah, like a lot of people say, oh, you know, Daniel Craig, he's very much what Fleming would have thought about as his James Bond, but you could put I think Connery in this, you could put that forward as up there as what, you know, he might have been looking for. It's very much more of a darker sort of more hard ass.
Well, the funny thing is apparently Ian Fleming didn't like Sean Connery at the first casting calls.
What did he know? Was he a casting agent?
I know he wasn't. No, but I think exactly. he grew to like him.
Well, of course. So I think you know, he's like, he's just... This is probably the film before I think Connery got bored of being Bond. Mm. I mean, if you look at it, I mean...
Get it for the paycheck.
If you look at, like, the first four Bond films, you know, Doctor No, Rush with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, they came out in 62, 63, 64, and 65.
Yeah, it's a lot of them.
That is... Probably. No wonder he got bored of doing it, because that is, you know, it's like boom, 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 boom. And I think, you know, people always say, like, you know, you know, Goldfinger and You Only Live Twice, kind of, they're the kind of template for the Bond films with the big kind of crazy gadgets, the big crazy Bond villain, the lairs and that kind of thing. I think, you know, I think there are a lot of the, you know, the Daniel Craig films, I think, go back to the kind of feeling of From Rush With Love, that kind of, you know, hard man-punching Bond film.
I mean, it's really, really, really well thought of, From Rush With Love.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, it's really, it's so many people's, like, favourite James Bond film, and, like, critics, I think it was, like, it was the only James Bond film to appear on I think it was Empire, or one of those Total Film or something. List. Yeah, did a...
because the film's still really good, and, you know, Bond wears the hat in it.
And it was the only James Bond to a film to appear, and it was ninth, so...
Next, I think a lot of the film, obviously, it's... I think from You Only Live Twice, really, it's like downhill into camp after that, isn't it?
It's not the last one, but it's certainly from
Goldfinger and from the twice one. Kind of they straddle the camp line a fair bit. You know, they're teaching on the edge, and then it's I think after that is when it kind of starts going on the Roger Moore slide to Campsville.
Yeah, thing is as well, it was the '60s, so at that time, pretty much everything was going camp.
Weren't we all, Martin? Weren't we all?
So what would everybody say that Sean Connery's last turn as James Bond was?
Well, never seen ever again,
diamonds.
Clearly.
No, well, diamonds are forever.
I think you'll find it was actually in the video game adaptation of From Russia with Love.
Of course it was. Well done.
He recorded dialogue voice, for the 2005 game.
He did two games with it, didn't he?
No, just one.
No, just the one. Just the one.
I thought he did two games.
No.
All the rest, there was a lot of them were the Brosnan ones, but no, this was the
Bondi,
only one he did.
Video game from that era.
All around that time, there was like...
I'm thinking of Everything on the Thing, that's what I'm thinking
of. Everything, which is the original, which was like an original...
Brosbond.
One, and there was a Nightfall, wasn't there? That was another sort of original, inverted commas.
Yeah.
Story, if you know what I mean, but no, this was his last time as Bond so far, anyway. Unless he comes back to do another voice, but
he could clearly come back, couldn't he?
I've never played the game. I don't know. I heard it was crap.
Yeah, I've got the game. It wasn't that great, to be honest. Not compared to the likes of Quantum of Solace.
Was that a good Bond game?
Quantum of Solace is one of the best games I've ever played on, never mind just a good Bond game.
That's a bold statement right there.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Is it sort of like Call of Duty or something?
It's first Bond person of Duty. Action. But the thing that I like about it is the fact that if you get into close range with somebody, you can actually do the melee strikes, and actually you've got to follow the on-button commands for it to do that, for it to successfully do it.
A quick time event?
Well, sure, it's shorter than a quick time event, really.
Surely they called it a bond-em-up in that bit.
Bond-em-up.
You got man-bonded.
It's a queue.
A queue time event. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good one. I've got to say,
comedy.
I like that.
Q time events. Oh yeah.
Yes. Good game.
Yeah. My only problem with From Russia with Love is that it doesn't really build to a climax. It's obviously got the boats blowing up, and you got the kind of Rosa Klebb fight in the hotel room, but it hasn't got that kind of big set piece at the end. But you know, it's still really good though.
Yes, okay. It's a great film. I'd have to say. Sean Connery was actually my favourite Bond right before Daniel Craig came out, and then he's sneaking away.
What's the music for From Russia with Love?
From Russia with Love.
No, that's You Only Live Twice. It's From Russia with Love.
It's Russia. It's love. From Russia with love.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so from would you Russia say that this is your... with love.
Would you say that this is your favourite Sean Connery then? This is your favourite Sean Connery Bond?
My favourite of the Connery Bonds. Although I do have a soft spot for You Only Live Twice.
Same here, yeah.
And I think You Only Live Twice was the first Bond film that my son watched, which is quite a special moment, really. We watched his first Bond. And he was thoroughly bored, thoroughly bored. He was like, Daddy, can we watch something else? I'm like, no, it's James Bond, it's good. He's like, no, but it's boring. And then James Bond started fighting ninjas in like an exploding volcano. And he was like, this is the best film ever. This is amazing. It's like, yes, it
you
is.
Mean other than Moonraker, where they go to the moon and Wait, Jaws? Yeah. And
Golden Gun is his favourite Bond song.
Right, okay.
He's got Lulu doing the Bond theme for that. The man with the golden gun. He's got a powerful weapon. Actual lyric there for you.
Second time.
Jared? What's your favourite Bond? Favourite Bond and favourite Bond song? No, favorite, song. Favourite Bond film.
Probably my favourite Bond film.
Film.
And it's probably for a funny reason. It's probably Golden Eye. And it's probably got a lot to do with the game.
Oof,
I would
yes,
say,
true.
But I really liked Pierce Brosnan in that film as Bond.
But I would say that all the promise of GoldenEye never really came to anything.
No, it sort of fizzled and dizzled. And of course,
GoldenEye is a great film. Apple. It's a great Bond film.
Martin Campbell. I find GoldenEye to be a very pure Bond film in that it's, you know, excluding Casino Royale and Quantum Solace as being very different to what Bond films were like. I think GoldenEye has everything that you would expect and want from a James Bond film and does it all very well.
Yeah, and don't forget the tank chase.
It has the
sequence.
Big, silly plot. Yeah. It has the travelling all over the country. It has the gadgets. It has the action. It's got, you know, I think it's got a very good James Bond and Pierce Brosnan. I think he was very good. I think by Die Another Day, he also was probably getting a bit fed up with doing it.
So would you say that, like,
on with the worst James Bond films, Tomorrow Never Dies, which is just a slog to
oh,
get
really?
Through. Oh, I hate it. It's just,
oh,
it
I think that's one of his better ones.
It does not interest me or excite me in any way. I find it really tough to get through.
What are your thoughts on Was Not Enough? Because
I don't
that...
really like it as well.
Yeah, that's terrible. That
I, and I hate To Die Another Day. So I would say that
great
his only
song,
film
great Bond song.
Was GoldenEye.
Would you say then, like, but, GoldenEye is like the Roger Moore style Bond film but done properly?
Yes.
Yes,
I think that's a good way of saying it. It's everything that you remember. It's got the gadgets, it's got the girls, it's got the villain, it's got the you know, as I say, the travel, the different, the exotic locations and such like that. And and I think definitely a lot of it has to do with the fact that the game was so good. I think
it was a great game.
That is what makes me think. But I don't know. I have a lot of love for. A View to a Kill for the pure campiness of it. I've got a lot of love for License to Kill.
I got a License to Kill!
So do you have a favourite Bond then, would you say?
Not Bros Bond?
I don't know. I think it's still somewhat controversial to say Daniel Craig, but Daniel Craig.
See, I'd go to the same thing with you. I'd because it used to be my favourite Bond film and favourite Bond used to be Sean Connery and Goldfinger. I used to adore those films, and then all of a sudden Casino Royale came out and blew my mind and thought...
Was it when he came out of the water in his pants?
No, it was staring at Eva Green and her accent.
Martin, you're among friends. This is a safe place, okay? It's a safe place. Was it Daniel Craig when he came out of the water in his pants?
It was Judi Dench. Judi Dench coming out the water.
In your mind, that's how it went. Oh, Dame Judi! Be my Dame!
You know that show, As Time Goes By, I want to be Lionel Palmer.
I bet you do. Who doesn't, Martin? Who doesn't?
So, yes.
The man's an English legend.
He is.
Yeah, I would say Daniel Craig.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I said before, but my favourite Bond would obviously be Woody Allen.
Indeed.
That's shocking. Or it's not even based Niven? On the...
Peter Sellers, yeah, Peter Sellers.
David Niven was that?
Oh, Niven, yeah, David Niven as well, yeah.
They were all Bonds in that film because it was all shit. It's not even based on the fucking story. It's utter bullshit.
It's based on a story, though. Called Casino Royale. It's got Bond in it. Oh, you thought it's a Bond film, clearly.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No. What was the last book that was actually directly...
The Last Ian Fleming book?
James Bond Jr.
That was actually made into a film?
Well, later on... Well, thing is, he wrote some short stories, and I... Because the last Bond...
Quantum of Solace wrote, was from a short
story,
was it? Yeah, it was
a story, and that was the last one that was turned into a film.
Wasn't that just the title, though?
No, is that... Well, actually, I think there are some parts of it which do relate to it, but as it was a short story, I don't know how... I've not actually read it yet, because they usually piled them all together. I think it was Moonraker and Quantum of Solace. Let me just have a look at that.
There you go. The title was chosen from a 1960s short story from Your Eyes Only, though the film does not contain any element of the original story.
There we go.
Boom! I was right! I'm with the podcast.
I'm just looking to see, because Ian did write quite a few short stories, but they all chop and change them. Like, you know, in License to Kill, when Felix Leiter gets disabled from the shark and gets his legs eaten and everything.
E.T. legs eaten?
Yeah. That's actually from Live and Let Die book. So they chop and change. So, yeah.
Remember that film being a bit scared because the dude in the thingy chamber gets blown up in the hyperbaric chamber.
Oh, that's a good part, that is.
I remember seeing that on film. What must have been film, 1989, and it scared me a little bit. Didn't like that.
There you go.
Frickin' laser beam.
So, yes.
No! No, Jared, no. No. Just no. So, there, Bond.
I think that's quite...
So, I am quite excited about Skyfall because I love...
Skies?
And falling, yeah. No, because I'm not an overly massive Sam Mendes fan, but I do love Road to Perdition a lot. So,
is that a good film?
I think he's got a good eye for stuff. Although Mark Forster, I mean, the problem is, can he do action? Because, you know, Mark Forster.
It's all right. They just got the Jason Bourne stunt team in there.
As long as he doesn't just decide, well, you know, it's an action film, therefore I'm just going to run, shake the camera around while people punch each other, so you don't really know what's going on.
I'm sure they use the stunt team from the Bond films, from the Bourne films, for the Quantum of Solace. Sure they did.
More than likely.
They just got in like the second unit from the Jason Bourne films. Like, boom, there you go, job done. Film it, boys. I'll research. Do you, Phil?
I tell you what, I was going to say is, I think that Skyfall is... I keep on thinking of Skyrim whenever I say Skyfall.
Boruto!
I think that... What?
I've not seen that video, the dragon shout.
It's a men.
Oh, sorry. But that video made me laugh so much.
I
almost made me buy the game just for that.
I'm close to getting it because my mate's got it and he keeps on saying how much it's good.
I'm afraid I have no time. I have Skyward Sword. That is enough. Yeah. And I have Super Mario Land 3D. They are enough.
Mm. Anyway, back to Bond. I think that Skyfall is going to be Daniel Craig's last Bond film. I've got a feeling.
He'll do a trilogy and go.
Yeah.
Of course, then. Who would you have as next? Because there's only one person I could think of who could slot into that this new type of James Bond they've created.
I'm guessing that the person you're thinking of is Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
knew it.
I have a very particular set of skills, Q.
There's only one man could fit into that character now. He's Liam Neeson. He'd be awesome.
His name's Michael Fassbender. I reckon he's going to do it next. Boom.
I feel like no one's listening to me. I'm saying Statham.
Who'd you say Michael who?
Michael Fassbender.
Oh, Michael Fassbender. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people have pulled him up now since the X-Men, when he basically does a bit of a James Bond sort of thing. He would be very good because he's very much along that line of what they've done with Daniel Craig. But they may decide they want to go a completely different direction again. You know, you just don't know. But if they were to stick with what they're doing, I would say, yeah, Fassbender, he's up in there because he's pretty badass
He's already got Bond. Frank Martin.
My name's James Bond, innit?
See? Be glorious.
I'm going to get you. I've got a watch and it's got a laser in it.
I'm going to punch you right in the face.
Have you all seen the picture on the internet of Jason Statham as the Doctor with all this? You know the whole Doctor Who movie? Somebody's actually done
it. Got that before me. I came up with the idea weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
I've been trying to flip an edit.
It's just him in the TARDIS shooting a gun.
Amazing.
Oh, you Dalek, I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
Sonic screwdriver in the face.
Man, Jason Statham as Doctor Who, that would be stunning.
It would be shit.
It would be amazing.
Yes, it would be shit.
It would be amazing.
I do like the. Yeah. I do like the. I can't say his name. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Hey,
is that how you say it? Chiwetel Ejiofor.
You're speaking Japanese language.
What's going on?
What's his name? Let me.
Are you being racist?
No, what's his name?
You've already gone against the French.
I'm racist because I can't say it.
Why are you being so racist?
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
What?
Right, type this in.
No. I don't want
to. You'll know him when you see him.
The police will come around and arrest me.
He's been in. You'll know him from crap ton of stuff. He's been in Serenity. He was
the assassin dude.
Yeah.
What was Bond?
I want to know how you spell his name, so Serenity.
No, it's Doctor Who.
Oh, Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Nah, Statham.
No,
Stallone.
Oh, him. Okay. Let me see. What, him? No.
You're a racist.
No, it's
You're
not
a racist.
That.
Yeah,
it's 'cause
racist.
They're thinking about, well, if they do anything in this film, I think the perfect Black Doctor Who would be the guy from Hustle, personally.
Yeah, he'd be all right. Yeah, but I mean, apparently Stephen Moffat has basically said it's never going to happen.
I don't think it'll happen because I don't think they'll be ready for the same reason why there'll never be a female Doctor.
Yeah,
I don't think people will like it. Same reason why I don't think there'll be a Black Bond. Actually, that's a good question as well. Does anyone think that there'll be a Black Bond? And if so, who?
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Rampage from the A-Team.
Rampage.
Do you know who I think will make a good Black Doctor? And that would be the Chris guy Jones. Who was. Oh no, he can't be it. I was going to say, you know, the guy who played Doctor Moon in Doctor Who, but he would also been in some of the Brosnan Bonds. He would be awesome. Let me see.
Mark
he
Henry.
I think they're going to have a hard time following up Daniel Craig.
Well, that was nice to see them.
Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig, sorry, mental fluff. Not if they get Michael Fassbender.
Well, I think he, yeah, okay, yeah, but I think they'll still have a hard time. I think it will be difficult. But
Jason,
you know,
Statham.
I could be wrong.
You are wrong. It's Jason Statham. That's it. That's how we're ending the Bond section, but by me just saying Jason Statham.
Just Jason Statham.
Jason and Statham.
Do you not think, though, he's done that, though?
No.
He's done that character time and time again.
No! And if he thinks that, I don't care, because I want to see him punch men in the face.
If he plays James Bond as Chev Chelios, then I...
Oh, that would be a film. That would be a film. Never going to happen. It's like the way that Tarantino said he directed a Bond film. Would you be interested in seeing that?
That would be the worst James Bond film ever.
The worst, yeah.
Or it could be awesome.
No, it would be rubbish. It would be like George Lucas directing a James Bond film.
It wouldn't be that bad. Come on.
Mr. James Bond! Mr. Getcha!
Yeah, the dude who played Jar Jar. He can do it. He's black. Job done.
Ahmed Best.
Yeah. Not the best at being Jar Jar, though, is he?
Anywho.
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham. Let's end it there. Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Jason Statham once again.
So if you want to hear more about Jason Statham, you can follow me on Twitter at Evil Ninja Phil. To my bet. You can do yours.
Go on, Jared.
Okay. You can follow me at Chupa Chupa Two Peas and Chupa.
And you can follow me anytime you like, because I'm quite lonely. No, mine's is.
Mine's, that's your great grammar there, mine. Jesus.
Mine's. Yeah.
I've been on mine's tonight.
Yeah, so join us next week for the Tom Selleck special.
Yes.
Tom Selleck special. Which is basically just three men and a baby.
No, it's Runaway.
Quincy Down Under.
It's Runaway and An Innocent Man, thank you very much.
I'm doing Quigley Down Under. I don't know what Quincy Down Under would have been.
It would have been a journey into pathology.
Yes. Down Under!
Quincy's been really angry. What the hell am I doing down here?
I don't understand you.
God damn it, the water doesn't go down the sink the right way. God damn it.
Yeah, right.
I love Quincy.
Excellent.
Well, you guys, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I got to some kind of wrangle this into some kind of edited form now. Jesus.
Excellent. Christ. Easy.
Yeah, I just cut it to me just saying Jason Statham for an hour or so.
Yeah, bye.
Jason Statham. Jason Statham. Jason Statham. Jason Statham.
Bye.
Jason Statham. Jason Statham. Jason Statham.
Aspender.
Aspender, more like. Ha! Aspender. You see what I did there?
Yeah.
Well, we did all the rest. We did racism, xenophobia. We also get homophobia in there as well. You know, complete the set.
Barton and Phil will return in a punch to a man face.